We're going to call this meeting of the Academic Research and Student Affairs Committee to order. Winner, would you please take the roll?
Chair Geddes.
Here.
Vice Chair McAdoo.
Here.
Regent Arascada.
Here.
Regent Dubrava.
Here.
Regent Perkins.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. We'll move to item number one, public comment. Is there any public comment in ELCO?
There is no public comment in ELCO.
Is there any public comment in Las Vegas?
No public comment in Las Vegas.
Is there any public comment here in Reno? Seeing none, we'll go to item number two, consent items for possible action. Do I have a motion for approval?
Motion for approval.
Motion from Regent Arascada, second from Regent McAdoo.
Second, yes.
Any questions or comments? All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. We'll go to item number three, CSN program proposal, AAS, advanced manufacturing. President Zaragoza.
Oh. Mr. Chairman, here to provide the report is Vice President of Academic Affairs, James McCoy.
Good morning. For the record, my name is James McCoy, Vice President for Academic Affairs at the College of Southern Nevada. Chair Geddes, Regents, good morning. It's a pleasure to be here today to present for your consideration a new Associate of Applied Science degree in Advanced Manufacturing. The CSN Advanced Manufacturing and Applied Technologies faculty, with the support of Dr. Mike Spangler, Dean of our CSN School of Advanced and Applied Tech, and our CSN Executive Director for Advanced Manufacturing, Mr. Dan Flick, have worked diligently to develop this direct-to-workforce degree. I would also like to express the gratitude to the NC Academic Affairs Council for their support of this proposal. So CSN has been working diligently and closely with the manufacturing industry in Southern Nevada to develop a new highly skilled, highly paid technical workforce in the region. As you know, manufacturing is an incredibly growing sector in Southern Nevada, with companies moving to the valley and creating jobs that help diversify our economy base. This culminating stackable credential that I bring to you today is designed to lead to one of several potential career paths. According to GOED, because of Nevada's central location to Western markets, Nevada is obviously ideal for manufacturing and distribution operations. The Las Vegas Global Economic Alliance, we know them as OVGEA, works closely with GOED and the institutions to assist companies to expand their businesses to Nevada and to help diversify this region. As an example, just in June of 2021, the LBGEA assisted six large manufacturing operations with relocating and or expanding in the Southern Nevada area. These new operations range from food processing, minting, and eyewear manufacturing to e-commerce and global distribution centers, promising more than 1,500 jobs alone just in those areas over the next 5 years. CSN's Advanced Manufacturing Program curriculum is relevant to all the manufacturing occupations in that it builds a technician that can install, maintain, troubleshoot, and fix the electrical and mechanical systems and programming that make up a manufacturing and logistics systems. So this degree is designed to have multiple points of entry for students of all kinds. It's all about accessible pathways with built-in stackable credentials along the way. Students can either enroll directly into this new AAS program with your approval, or they can begin taking related coursework with non-credit Division of Workforce Economic Development, we call them DWED at CSN, which integrates into this academic degree pathway seamlessly. Students may begin the advanced manufacturing pathway with a certificate, which in and of itself offers employability, certainly at the skill certificate and a certificate of achievement levels in both machining and automation. And for those students who want to continue on and progressing in their employment, this degree is ideal for them. Additionally, students may begin their pathway in advanced manufacturing through dual and concurrent enrollment opportunities in partnership with the Clark County School District and others in Southern Nevada. So as you know, manufacturing is clearly a growing industry in the Southern Nevada. For example, you've heard, and we've spoke about many times, Haas Automation. Haas Automation is coming to town very, very soon. In fact, in March of 2021, they broke ground on their new 2.5 million square foot manufacturing plant in West Henderson. The company will help diversify Henderson, no doubt, and in turn, the city of Henderson is building a new manufacturing training center where CSN will deploy programming. We're thankful for the industry employers who have not only endorsed this new degree program at CSN, as is evidenced through their written letters of support included with this proposal this morning, But we're also grateful to them for their contributions in helping us develop the right lineup of courses for this new degree. The new AAS in Advanced Manufacturing has the support and backing from industry stakeholders such as Haas Automation, Klein, and Ericsson International. Additionally, the Clark County School District, the City of Henderson, and the Henderson Chamber of Commerce have all provided levers of support for this new degree at CSN. Regents Chair Geddes accompanying me today via video from their Southern Nevada office at INSHE, our Dr. Mike Spangler, Dean of our CSN School of Advanced and Applied Technologies, and Mr. Dan Fleck, CSN Executive Director of Advanced Manufacturing, who can help answer any questions you may have. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Do I have a motion for approval?
Motion for approval.
Move to approve.
Motion from Regent DeBrava, second from Regent Ariscotta.
Correct.
Any questions or comments?
Comment. Fits perfectly with our goals. AB 450, the whole nine. Perfect. Well done.
Thank you, Regent Ariscotta.
Seeing no other questions or comments, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Motion carries unanimously. Congratulations. We'll go to item number four, handbook revision, foster youth fee waiver. Acting Vice Chancellor Renee.
Good morning, everyone. Acting Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs and Community Colleges. And I'm here today to bring forward a revision to the board's foster youth fee waiver policy. Now, many of you will remember that this policy was approved first in September 2018, and it provides a waiver of registration fees and some other fees to foster youth who meet certain qualifications. So the revision today has two parts. The first part of the revision has to do with foster youth who are sent out of state by the Nevada welfare agencies to have care. They graduate from an out-of-state high school. And what had happened is that originally when this policy was passed was that the policy applied to Nevada high school graduates only. But then when we realized that there were this population of students who were sent out of state, it wasn't their choice, the agency makes those decisions, we quickly came back to the board and requested a revision to include those students in the eligibility. However, when we did that, we inadvertently added some language that treated the two populations, the Nevada high school graduates and the out-of-state graduates, differently. And so we're trying to rectify that with this current revision. So we're basically removing the language that refers to having achieved permanency. That's the first part. And then the second part has to do with the age at which a student must have been in care of the state in order to qualify, and we're proposing to drop the age from 14 to 13. And the main reason for that is to bring it into alignment with the provisions for federal student aid that determine a student's dependency status based on the age and their foster youth experience. So those are the two things that we're looking to do with this policy revision, and I am at the ready to answer any questions you might have.
Do I have a motion for approval?
So moved.
So moved.
Motion from Regent McAdoo, second from Regent Perkins. Are there any questions or comments?
Question.
Regent Ariscotta.
At the age of 13, what is the duration for that age? Is it for the full year of 13? Is it you have to be 13 and in custody in a foster family for 1 week, 1 month, 1 year? What is the duration?
Thank you for that question, and it would be, because of the way it's stated, it would just be if the student turns 13 and they're in, so it could be one day at age 13.
No brand perfect. Every child should have an education as an option. Wonderful.
Seeing no other questions or comments, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay.
Aye.
Motion carries unanimously. I need to pause a little bit for that delay, don't I? Anyway, we're moving on to item number five, handbook revision residency requirements. Renee.
Thank you. For the record, Acting Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs and Community Colleges. I wanted to give you a little information on the background for this proposed revision. So many of you are very familiar with our residency for tuition purposes policy. It's fairly lengthy, Chapter 15. And in this case, we're looking to revise Section 4, which has to do with statuses of individuals who have been in the state for a year and are looking to establish residency for tuition purposes. Already, the existing policy allows for students who are officially granted asylum or if they have refugee status to qualify after 1 year of residency. And so we're very simply trying to add students who, according to the USCIS, who come from a country that is eligible for temporary protective status. So we're adding those to that existing list, and it's a pretty simple revision in policy, but will be, of course, very impactful for those impacted by this.
Do I have a motion for approval?
Look at my guy here. So move.
Motion from Regent McAdoo, second from Regent Arascata. Any questions or comments?
Quick question.
Regent Arascata.
Approximately how many students or how many enrollees would we have?
Regent Arascata, I am sorry, I don't have those figures, and I'm not positive how we would get those because that could be a moving target. We don't expect it to be a huge number, but I can inquire to the campuses if they have any. Okay.
Good. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Seeing no other questions and comments, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Motion carries unanimously. Item number 6, handbook revision, fees and expenses. Renee.
Thank you. For the record, Renee Davis, Acting Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs and Community Colleges. This next handbook revision has to do with membership in the student government. And actually, this conflict in policy was brought forward by Matthew Hahn, who's the chair of the Nevada Student Alliance. In their work in looking at the policy. So essentially, all students pay into the fees that support the student governments, and that could be in one of two ways. One way is as part of the distribution of fees from the registration fee, and the other way is a named fee that students pay in addition to the registration fee. But either way, at every campus, all students, regardless of enrollment level, pay into those funds. So what we noticed in this policy was that there was a threshold, a credit enrollment threshold, that was required to be a member of the student government. And so we're simply removing that, which would then really align with current practice and also with the other provisions of policy.
Do I have a motion for approval?
Motion
so
for
moved.
Second.
Motion from Regent Arascata, second from Regent McAdoo.
I believe that was Regent Perkins.
Oh, Regent Perkins. Yeah. Thank you.
I support it, however.
Okay. I don't support it, and I'm going to vote no. One of the reasons those thresholds were put in was we had a bunch of students, or not a bunch, but we had a handful of people who would enroll for one class and then get in student government and wreak havoc. So we kind of put in a threshold there so they were at least invested in the institution. So personally, I'm a no. So with that, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Nay. Motion passes 4-1.
Quick question, Regent Geddes. How was it? Was it something that was abused, or something that was taken advantage of? Did you see it quite often? You're the historian here.
There was a couple of incidents where somebody from political organizations signed up for a class, and then got into student government, and were pushing political agendas that weren't consistent. So it was abused. But I understand the reasoning from the student government at this point in time. I just, not a fan.
Thank Thank you.
With that, we'll move to item number 7, 2021 NESHE Sponsored Funding Annual Report. Marcy, there she is. I love this report.
Do I have a clicker or? Thank you, Ed. Okay. I'm Marcy Jackson. I am the director of the System Sponsor Programs and EPSCoR office, and this is the annual sponsor program report for the entire system. Each of the institutions self-reports the sponsor programs that they have brought in through the year, and we highlight those in this report. Just to touch base with some folks, you may not be familiar with some of our terminology, but sponsor programs is what we in higher education call our grants and contracts that come in. Okay, so the sponsor programs funding that does come in is very related to all of NESHE's strategic goals. You always think about research first, perhaps, because of our two R1 research institutions as well as Desert Research Institute. But the institutions also bring in funding that helps support our access and close the achievement gaps through preparatory services, student success goals through tutoring and counseling, and of course, our community colleges have a lot of workforce development funding that they bring in. This slide shows our trend over the last 5 years. These are all the awards that come in, whether they be federal, state, or other types of funding. You can see in the last 2 years, there was a huge increase in our fundings. And that is related to the federal funding that was available through the pandemic funding, pandemic response funding. We would expect that as that funding expires, that we will see a drop in our awards back to probably the pre-pandemic level, which was the fiscal year 19 report. But we were steadily increasing our awards before that funding came in. So the federal funding was given to us through the Corona.
Hey, Marcy, yeah. Sorry, just real quick. For next year's presentation?
Yes.
Or on that, if you could actually just break out that bar into the ARP funds and our funds so we can see it as an anomaly.
Yes, I okay. Could do that. And then this slide does show how this year, how that funding came in. Okay. So there was a Coronavirus Aid Relief and Economic Security Act Fund, which was CARES, the Higher Education Emergency Relief Fund, HERF, and then there was COVID-specific funding. One that you may have all heard about is funding that helped research the amount of coronavirus in the wastewater system. And so this is how much each of our institutions received in that type of funding, and that varies greatly based upon their student population, their needs, and their minority serving status. So we had in our total awards, we received $657 million this year. Of that, the direct federal funding was $456.2 million. And that is important to know how much we're getting directly from the federal government rather than state and nonprofits or other industries, because we like to see that our institutions are being seen as competitive for the federal government. Of that money, $182 million was research, and there was an overall increase of $94 million in scholarship funding through this pandemic response for our institutions that went directly to our students. So each of these next slides will touch on the institutions. And so you know, we separate out our sponsor programs into what we call functional categories. So they are categorized as research, student services, instruction, public service, other, or scholarships. And details on all of these amounts are included in the appendix if you want to look at them in more detail. But for UNLV, they had increased their awards $95 million in fiscal year 21, and that includes $127.8 million in the CARES HERF COVID funding. Excluding their pandemic funding, they had an overall increase of approximately $10 million. New funding around data science and new life science projects were funded by the National Science Foundation. They also received funding from the National Institutes of Health for the Mountain West Clinical and Technical Research Institute Network, which is a grant that partners 13 universities across 7 states. UNLV also continued their work with the U.S. Department of Transportation on improving rail transportation infrastructure sustainability and durability. At UNR, they had an increase of $109 million in awards, including $19.7 million in the CARES HERF COVID funding. UNR Med also had an increase of $31.5 million in awards. New projects included a partnership with the University of California, San Diego, for the Pacific Gas and Electric Company Territory Alert Wildfire System to support fire ignition combustion confirmation. And funding from NSF will allow the research and development of new technologies to manage manure management systems to reduce environmental impacts. Also, the National Institutes of Child Health and Human Development is funding research into the impact of lifestyle and environmental factors into the sperm epigenome. Research was affected by the pandemic, with all human subjects research having to end, but they were able to keep critical laboratories open using CDC PPE requirements. For DRI, their research efforts continue to grow from $39.5 million to $43.5 million, which is a 10% increase year to year. They were challenged by the COVID pandemic, but they weren't hampered. In addition to continuing their partnerships with the Department of Defense and Department of Energy, the OpenNet project provided data to farmers and water managers and was introduced in both the Senate and House floors by Senator Cortez Masto and Representative Susie Lee. DRI was also involved in COVID research related to the effects of wildfire smoke on COVID-19 symptoms that received national and worldwide attention. And the Environmental Microbiology Lab is working on refining the methods for determining the levels of COVID in rural and tribal communities through the wastewater. For NSC, there was an increase of awards to $13.8 million, with $15.8 million in CARES HERF COVID funding. The U.S. Department of Education funded the Child Care Access Means Parents in Schools project, which covers child care costs for students. And the National Science Foundation funded a multi-institutional course-based undergraduate research experience in genetics, which ended up with students having published papers, conference presentations, and conference posters. The U.S. Department of Education also funded a TRIO Upward Bound pre-college program for CCSD students in 9 through 12, which provided fundamental support college access. And the Nevada Department of Education funded a program to encourage entrance into school-based mental health professions and retention of individuals in those pipelines. At CSN, there was an overall increase of $90.1 million in awards, with just over $101 million in CARES HERF COVID funding. Funding continued from the Nevada IDEA Network of Biomedical Research Excellence, the EMBRE program, as well as from the Nevada Space Grant Consortium. The CARES funding allowed for the purchase of technology and hardware to provide online learning at the cost of $2.2 million. It also funded faculty laptop conversions, student online health services, upgrading of the HVAC and air filtration systems, and student support services. GBC had an overall increase of $1.5 million in awards, including $2.7 million in CARES HERF COVID funding. The Governor's Office on Science and Innovation and Technology issued a STEM Challenge grant to expand the radiology technology and diagnostic medical imaging programs and recruited students that were underrepresented in STEM. GBC also received COVID workforce training funds that supported the paramedic certificate, commercial driver's licenses, ELIN workforce nursing program, and the distance workforce training technology. HERF funds have been primarily used to offset personnel costs due to state operating budget reductions. And GBC also used some of their funds for additional technology to support distance and online education classes, remote work, and accessibility to services. At TMCC, there was an overall increase of $12.2 million, which include $14.9 million in CARES HERF funding. TMCC received a 5-year, $1.3 million grant from the U.S. Department of Education for a TRIO program to increase rates of college persistence, graduation, and transfer from 2 to 4-year institutions, which supports low-income, first-generation, and disabled students. The U.S. Department of Labor funded a project to grow advanced manufacturing apprenticeships with Tesla and Panasonic. UNR also sub-awarded EMBRE funds to TMCC. The HERF funds were used for primarily emergency financial aid, enabling distance education, and replacing lost auxiliary funds due to the pandemic. GOED also provided funding to for equipment technology and staffing when distance learning became needed. For WNC, there was an increase of $6.5 million in awards, with $3.3 million in CARES HERF funding. HERF funding was used to purchase technology for students and faculty, PPE, and new ventilation equipment, along with emergency student aid. The Western Nevada College and Gear Up announced that 3 new partners have joined the Nevada Green Business Network, including the City of Reno, the Reno Sparks Chamber of Commerce, and the Nevada Conservation League. They also presented an auto body repair and auto body pollution prevention workshop, which was funded by the EPA. EMBRE and NASA Space Grant afforded hands-on research for their undergraduate students. So this slide shows the collaborations among our institutions. This is where an institution has received an award, and then they sub-award funds to other institutions to be a part of that project. You'll see on this slide that the NCSA office has a large number of sub-awards, because that is the function of our office. We help manage large statewide projects and that involve all of our institutions. So this includes the NASA Space Grant, the NASA EPSCoR, NSF EPSCoR, Gear Up projects. Overall, there were 117 funded projects through these collaborations for $13.5 million. And this slide shows the proposals submitted and received in fiscal year 2021. And out of the 22 federal agencies that we list in the appendices, our institutions had sent in proposals to 19 of those 22 in the last year. So we have about a 55% acceptance rate, looking at these numbers, which is pretty on brand, on standard for everybody. And then this slide shows our distribution of the special state match funds that are managed through our office. These go as match to the federal awards for NASA EPSCoR, NASA Space Grant, NSF, and for Gear Up programs. And it also supports some infrastructure within our office, including the state EPSCoR director funding. And these funds go out on different timelines sometimes because of how we do our solicitations. The funding for our various space grant programs usually will go out later in the summer, and so then they'll hit after the timeline of this report sometimes. So overall, we received $657.9 million in awards this year, and of that, $287.2 million was the CARES HERF COVID-related funding. So are there any questions?
Any questions or comments? Regent McAdoo?
I really appreciate the report, but I especially wanted to just acknowledge your slide number 14, the intersystem collaborations, because in my almost end of 6 years on the board, I have seen the increase of collaborative spirit between our 8 institutions, and I'm telling you that makes me very happy as a regent, because I believe collaboration is what will make us more and more successful. So thanks for sharing that.
Yes. Thank you.
Seeing and hearing no other comments, thank you very much, Marcy.
Thank you.
And now we'll go to item number 8, National Science Foundation, NSHE Track 1, Fred Harris.
For the record, Fred Harris, Nevada State EPSCoR Director, and Nevada National Science Foundation EBSCOR Project Director. I have the privilege today of talking about a proposal that has been several years in the making, harnessing the data revolution for fire science. But first, I want to start off by talking about what is an NSF EBSCOR Track 1. Basically, the National Science Foundation awards $20 million research infrastructure grants to states that fit under the EBSCOR requirements. That means that our state has less than 0.75% of the National Science Foundation budget. So their goal is to help us build infrastructure to make us more competitive. So we wrote a proposal dealing with fire science. The proposal is shooting for $20 million a year from a $20 million total from NSF, covers 5 years. There's also a $4 million jurisdictional match. And we submitted the proposal in August of 2021. It was a 35 pages of text, about 726 pages total that went in when you count all the other documents that go with it, some of which I had to appear before ARSA a year earlier, for example, for the science and technology plan updates that we did and reviewed there. That whole document had to be part of that. The goal for our proposal was basically to increase the capacity of Nevada for wildland fire research, education, workforce development. And we want to demonstrate that capacity by having good research that can be done within our state. And so the question is that we had to present to everyone else, I don't have to explain it to you, as to why do we have to worry about wildland fires in this state? This image that we put in the proposal signifies it the best. Basically, you have the top image, which shows you where the sagebrush ecosystem is. The bottom image shows you where fires can, the wildland fire issues are. It's basically Nevada and its five neighboring states hit the bullet on the head. So we are in the middle of it all. And so that was a major focus for our proposal. We have to deal with the fact that fire regimes have changed. These borders between sagebrush and forests have changed. The borders between forest and our towns have changed because our towns keep growing into them. So we have this whole issue with regards to droughts, fuel buildups, warming, and all these things impact us throughout the entire Intermountain State West. The proposal has a few major pictures, but this one kind of synthesizes it all, and we'll come back to it a little bit later. We have the fire continuum on the right. When you have a fire at the top of that image, you have stuff that happens between the fires, and you have stuff that happens during the fire. We basically, if we go to the very top, we have four partial rings outside the wildland fire science. We have the ecology and the hydrology that happen between things because those things change over time. And we have the fire process modeling on the right and the emissions and atmospheric aging that happen during the fire processes. In the middle disk, we have basically, I'll call it cyber infrastructure. How do we collect the data? How do we move the data? How do we do analysis on it? How do we model things with it, and how do we store it? So we have data that goes back and forth between the science, getting stuff out of the environment, the fire continuum, and moving it through to help the science researchers do stuff. There's a big management structure for this research project because this is not a one-man show. This is people from all across the state. The project leadership is made up on the science side of it, with Hans Musmuller as the science lead from DRI, Scotty Strachan, who's now at ENSHI, and Haroon Stephen at UNLV, and we've named another person, Alireza Tavakoli from UNR, as the major science leads. We also then have project management team from the ENSHI office. You just heard from Marcy. We have our project administrator, Kristen, has left, and we're under search for the replacement there. We have our education outreach diversity administrator, Michelle Casella, a communication specialist, which is open right now, and Mayara Cueto Diaz, who is our program coordinator. We have inside the proposal many, many subtopics, and there's many names that are involved in these. I'm not going to go through them. We also have a Nevada EBSCOR Advisory Committee. That one is set out with people from various parts of the state and industry, some of them from the legislature as well. We have evaluation assessment from the outside. Douglas Spencer from EDU Inc. is our external evaluator. We also have an external evaluation committee from academics and researchers throughout the country, people from the National Fire Service, a few other agencies, as well as universities. And here's a list of the people. These are the people that are involved from various campuses here and what kind of things they fit in, what they're doing. I provide this here just for complete information for the regents, not that you have to read everything here, but just to get an idea that we are having people that some of them have been hired by previous track ones. That's part of the infrastructure for the state. We'll talk about that in just a second. Some of them were participants in previous track ones. So we have a couple names up there with a percent sign showing that they were hired previously. That's helped build our research infrastructure so we can do more within our state. For this proposal, we have three new major faculty hires that will be provided by the, we'll search in year one of the proposal. We will provide funding for them for years two and three from the proposal funding, and the institutions will take over after year three, so years four and on. For DRI, they have selected to be a fire process modeling person. UNLV is picking somebody in research computing and data, and UNR is picking someone in research data architecture to help drive this. You notice that a lot of the CI pieces are the last two positions. Those are the pieces we've got to build to be able to allow better research within our state. We also have three postdoctoral researchers, one at each of the major campuses. DRI is having a fire field experiments lead. UNLV is having an interdisciplinary data science person. And UNR is having a fire ecology modeling postdoc. So, what are we going to do? Well, we get to burn stuff. I mean, that's what fire is all about, right? So we start off with burns on different sizes. We have in-lab burns at DRI. We jokingly say it's the postage stamp size, the pizza stamp size, and then we go outside to the burn barrels. We're working with the BLM Winnemucca District to do the burn barrels. We're going to set up 25-meter diameter burn barrel plots. And here's a picture on the right of a much smaller burn barrel from some of the BLM's previous experiments. They are really excited to have this going on. This is a really nice collaboration outside of the institution. So we'll have 20 burn barrel plots that we're going to burn half of them and use the other half to be able to assess the differences between the two of them over time. Then we're going to have some controlled burns that we'll be working with. This is going to be working with the BLM Winnemucca District Office as well. And then we're going to be working with larger burns in conjunction with the USF Forest Service for their FASME project. They do work on large-scale fire burns. They also come into fires that are already burning that were naturally started, or sometimes not naturally started, but they weren't planned. And they fly large planes over them to do stuff, and we're going to be working on some of the drones pieces with them underneath. So, I said this was capacity. The goal is to build capacity for our state. So in each of the science pieces and the cyber and the education, we had to come up with what our capacity was that we were going to build. In the ecology, we said we're going to build a mobile gas chamber or use one that's already partially constructed. And basically, you can think of it in the picture on the lower right as a nice plexiglass-covered area with two garage doors on the ends. And the goal is that it can go over something, drop the doors, measure gases, and figure out what's going on. And then raise the doors, and on a railroad track, move to the next plot. So we have some plots that will be burned. We have some plots that won't be burned. We're going to compare them over time. We're going to see how the stuff grows back after it's been burned. So we can have a 5-year longitudinal study, hopefully set up for continuation for some longer-term studies after that. In the lower left picture, you have the current prototype, which is at DRI, on a small railroad tracks. The goal is that this is entirely solar powered. So we don't have to fight to get power out there. We just have to be able to set all the train tracks up, if you want to think of it that way. And we're going to use the carbon fluxes and some machine learning to characterize above ground biomasses. We're going to do imagery from the drones. We're going to be able to look at the whole piece to see what burnt, what's left, and based upon the size of what burnt, we should also know what happened underground, what the root systems are like. We're also going to work on the hydrology side of it, and we're going to develop some UAS-based water test. I am sorry, I left out the abbreviation for fish. Some of you thought I was going to pull out a rod here, probably. Fire-induced soil hydrophobicity. If you've been out and seen a wildfire area, You can actually see the crust that burns on the ground. This is the hydrophobic area where if you drop water on it, you'll see that it takes a lot longer to get through this to the soil than if it wasn't a burned area. When we have a fire, they typically will walk around the edge of the fire to do that testing because they don't want to walk out in the middle because then it starts crunching and destroying things. We're going to be able to set up drones to be able to pattern in and do a grid pattern across it to be able to do that measurement for them, things that they have never been able to do. That's going to be able to help us set up some of the modeling and be able to move through some of the fire process modeling better. For the fire process modeling, we're going to fill the expertise gap. This was the area that we noticed in the proposal as a gap for our state. We're going to, DRI is hiring a physics-based computational fluid dynamics modeling processor. I've done a lot of work in fire spread modeling, but not on the fire process modeling. So we're going to hire someone there to help us fill those pieces in. In the emissions and atmospheric aging, we're building and taking our expertise that we have in the lab in our state and moving it to the outside world. And so therefore, we can actually do plume modeling from there too. For cyber infrastructure, we're going to align a lot of different topics. We have some expertise in computer vision. We have some expertise in machine learning. And so we're going to take those people and do the artificial intelligence combination of them to fill some key gaps in the research and data computing infrastructures. We're going to hire people. We're going to be able to use those sensors to be able to impact the sciences that we just talked about. I mentioned the drones being there. We're going to be able to talk about the fire process modelers. Basically, we use data sets that were created more than most of them before I was born. So the fact that we can actually fly drones over to figure out what the fuel load is ahead of the fire is going to let us to be able to build better data sets. It's going to be really nice on that part. For education and workforce development, our goal is to figure out how to get the pipeline moving from all the way from the bottom to the top. We want to be able to get those people that are coming into the STEM careers, help them get in mentorship with scientists, give them research opportunity grants at the undergraduate level, fund the researchers as their RAs in graduate school, work with the senior researchers, be able to mentor the senior researchers so they can do a better job all the way through, and basically help us see some of this technology work across our state. Now, I had to write these slides before everything was announced, so now I get to share the good news. They said yes. June 1st, we started. $20 million award, and we're ready to roll. The NSF, I had the panel, so I put some quotes in, so I thought maybe you might have an idea what they might say. The panel feels the proposed work will position ENSHE and the state of Nevada to lead research and education at the intersection of fire ecology and data science. That's the research infrastructure we want to be at, right? Overall, the panel emphasizes that the proposed research is exciting, forward-thinking, and would generate the knowledge for the jurisdiction to develop new strategies for studying, tackling, and managing the effects of wildfire. The panel ranks this proposal high priority. That's what you want out of NSF. That's what you want out of any funding agency. So now the ball is rolling. We've already started. We've had our first strategic planning team meeting with the leadership. August 8th and 9th, we bring everybody together with a consultant from NSF to help us do our full strategic planning. We are hiring people. We are beginning to start the searches, hopefully within the next month or two on the campuses. That way we can be ready to roll throughout the entire 5 years. Somebody used to say that the hard work was done. I said, no, the work is starting. We've done the preliminaries. The goal is, can we pull it all together to build that mentorship, to establish the science and get us moving? Do we have any questions?
Any questions? Regent McAleer?
It's just a comment. No questions, but congratulations on the award. That's a really big deal for Nevada. And I really appreciate that we are involved in that. I certainly understand and I think everyone in this room does, the intensity of wildland fires on our state. So thank you. And again, I love the collaborative piece of it. Thanks.
That is going to be the fun part, to be honest, is working with people across the state. We have some young faculty members that we want to mentor so they can be leaders in the future. And that is going to be the cool part.
Thank you very much, Fred. Appreciate it, and congratulations. We will now move to item number 9, Research University Carnegie Classification and Metrics Information, from UNLV Vice President for Research, Edmund Sienkowski, and I apologize if I butchered that, and UNLV Vice President for Research and Innovation, Myrtle Gautam. I've practiced his more. And just for the committee and the board, like we did with the UNLV School of Medicine, where we put together a 7-year funding plan as to how much it would cost to get it up and going, that we could show the legislature and we could develop. We did this similarly, and it was either 14 or 15. We put together a 7-year plan to get us R1, and maybe it was even 13. Anyway, 13?
14, 15.
So I just thought the committee would benefit from an update as to how we got to R1 and the value of R1 to the two R1 universities. So take it away.
Well, thank you. Good morning, Chair Geddes, Vice Chair McAdoo, members of the Board of Regents, Officer in Charge ABBA, and friends and colleagues in this room and those watching online. My name is Myrtle Gautam. I'm the Vice President for Research and Innovation at the University of Nevada, Reno.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Ed Sienkowski, very close. I have the privilege of serving as Vice President for Research at University of Nevada, Las Vegas. And I want to thank you for the information or for the invitation to speak with you today. I've known Vice President Gautam for some years from other vantage points that I've occupied in the national research scene and came to be introduced to the research ambitions of Nevada through that exchange, and it was more than delighted to join the University of Nevada, Las Vegas in the ENSHE system through that contact in 2021. I know he joins me in expressing gratitude and feeling the privilege of sharing something that is very near and dear to our hearts, which is research, innovation, graduate education, and their impact on Nevada's economic development and our national and international competitiveness. So we were asked to talk about the Carnegie Research Metrics and what drove us to R1 standing. And we will be doing that, and we think it's important in so doing to emphasize the why. What is the value proposition for the state investing in the research universities when it comes to economic impact and more broadly? And can we advance the slide, or do we have that capacity here? There you go. So let's give a brief overview of what it means to be an R1 university, technically and more broadly. The Carnegie classification is a framework for classifying colleges and universities in the U.S., and it was created in 1970 by the Carnegie Foundation for the Advancement of Teaching, and the classification includes all accredited degree-granting colleges and universities in the U.S. Now, both UNR and UNLV achieved R1 status in 2018, and this was recently affirmed in December of 2021. And I'm pleased to report that both UNR and UNLV are not near the edge of the bubble when it comes to this ranking. There are 146 institutions nationally that have R1 status, and we are at least 40 places beyond the boundary between R1 and R2. So the different classifications are shown in the second bullet here, the three primary categories for doctorate-granting institutions. There are other categories for institutions that don't grant doctorates. So we are in the highest tier. And in that, to give you a measure of that, the importance of that, that reflects 3% of the higher education institutions in the country. So this classification is published every 3 years. Again, in 2018, we both crossed the threshold. In 2021, our standing in that classification of R1 was affirmed as we are deeper in the R1 space. The next cycle is in 2024.
Edmund, just real quick. I remember in 2018 there were 130, and now it's 146.
Right.
Why did they move those metrics, do we know?
I don't have a clear understanding as to why that boundary has been moved.
It's a very competitive field now. That's what this is about. So please let me begin by saying that the Carnegie classification is not a ranking. It is a classification. It's a grouping of comparable universities in three classes, as Ed said, R1, R2, and doctoral professional universities. The Carnegie classification will show you levels of the relative levels of research activity, and it definitely highlights the competitiveness of our faculty. So R1 universities attract the best faculty, the best students, have the highest impact on our communities, and leverage government investments. With two R1 universities, NC demonstrates commitment and excellence, very high research activity with great economic, societal, and educational impact. So clearly we want to be amongst the best. The question is, what does it mean to be amongst the best? See, R1 universities lead the higher education agenda in the nation. They have better access to the federal government, to businesses, to industry, to foundations, and to media. R1 universities receive significantly higher share of the federal R&D funding. So to be a great public research institution, to be a great public research university, and a driver of regional economic development, we must continue to climb in the R1 placements. Notice I didn't say ranking because it's not a ranking. Through our pursuit of excellence and demonstrable accomplishments in an equitable and inclusive manner. So let me talk about what does it mean? How does R1 calculation come about? There are seven metrics, which are the global metrics. These are aggregates. The total R&D expenditures in science and engineering, the total R&D expenditures in non-science and engineering disciplines, the number of non-faculty research staff, which are the non-tenure track postdocs research faculty. And then you notice the next four items, earned doctorates, 4, 5, 6, 7, those bullets there. These are in the STEM, social sciences, humanities, and other fields. The other fields encompass education, nursing, public health, etc. So these are the aggregate attributes. So you realize the institutions, UNLV and the University of Nevada, Reno, UNLV had 724 faculty. We have 678 who are doing research. There's no way in the world we'll compete with the University of Virginia or Ohio State or UC Davis in the total aggregate. So institutions such as us depend upon the individual competitiveness of our faculty. Well, Carnegie looks at that as well. So they will look at a per capita attributes. What do individual faculty do on a per faculty basis? So they have three of those. The per faculty or the per capita R&D expenditures in science and engineering, the per capita R&D expenditures in non-science and engineering, and the number of research staff per capita. Now you must be wondering, how in the world does somebody take these 10 factors and collapse them and come up with a ranking? Well, they do. So they come up with an aggregate index that you see on the x-axis. They'll have a per capita index on the y-axis, very simply put. And they come up with a mean value, this ellipse you see, the red ellipse. In 2018, we were just on the edge of that, of the ellipse. Today, UNLV and UNR are further to the right. So everything that you see to the left of the ellipse is R2. Everything you see to the right is R1. We need to be further out to the right and further up on the y-axis. We're getting there. We need your support as we move forward.
So we're quite proud, I think rightly so, of achieving and maintaining R1 status. And I'll tell you a little bit about who the we is who ought to be proud about that. But first, on the right-hand side are two maps. If your state is colored red, then at the time you do not have any R1 institutions within your state. And in 2015, indeed, Nevada was red. The rest of the country, various shades of green, reflect the density of R1 institutions in those particular states. In 2018 and 2021, We, of course, achieved R1 status. Nevada, by this measure, turned green and joined proudly the contingent of states that have R1 institutions. Now, notice also, though, that the amount of red between 2015 and 2021 has reduced, and this is a reflection of investments that are being made nationally in other state institutions and other public universities to advance their excellence, because it's understood nationally the value proposition of having research institutions in one's own state with respect to workforce development, with respect to economic diversification, and the general well-being of the population. So the competition is fierce. We are competing for funding. We are competing for the best faculty. We are competing for the best students. And we are competing for economically diverse companies who are looking for locally available talent. If we are to attract these companies, we must have outstanding research universities to attract them. And finally, I want to point out that when I say we are talking about the state, ENSHI, in supporting investment in these research universities. We're talking about strategically smart decisions that have been made by university leadership in making decisions to develop research capacity where it matters most. And finally, we really need to give credit to outstanding faculty who are delivering as they need to be delivering when it comes to research output. So this is really a collective effort, and our achievement really is a reflection of a statewide commitment to excellence in UNR and UNLV.
So, as you can tell, R1 is about intensity, it's about excellence, it's about commitment and progress. It's not about the size of the research institution. It's about research being ingrained in a structure and the culture of an institution. And above all, it's about delivering the goods to the community and the citizens of the state. So R1 represents a mature, comprehensive university where all fields of academic, scholarly, and research endeavors matter. It's about graduate education. Excellence in research universities transforms economies, and many states are investing to enable this. And you've seen this wherever you see a great university, there's prosperity in that region. So there's a well-established link between high-quality, high-enrollment research universities and advances in state-level cultural and economic development. And economic development, very simply put, it's about jobs and wealth. Wealth not the way we talk about the Warren Buffett wealth, but a family earning enough so they can raise their families, they can live well, and then raise their kids well. And that's what we do every day. We bring in students, we train them, we educate them. They get specialized, whether in a master's or PhD program. They go out, create companies, and serve as economic drivers. So we have to ensure that our two universities are focused on the goal of making people's lives better in the highest traditions of American public institutions of higher education. We don't want to be an R1 for the sake of being an R1, please. We want to be amongst the best at making Nevadans' lives better, which we do every day. The faculty, staff, and students at UNLV and the University of Nevada, Reno, are doing so every day. That requires investments in our graduate students, in our doctoral students, in our faculty and staff. And it requires that the two universities leverage your investment and vigorously pursue, and we do this every day, pursue federal and industry funding. So let's talk about what's going on at the national level. You may have heard and seen reports on how the National Science Foundation plans to invest $100 billion over the next 10 years, in a new directorate that is aimed at fostering technology and innovation. It's called Technology, Innovation, and Partnerships Directorate. Now, of course, this $100 billion investment will depend upon the Senate and the Congress coming together and resolving the differences in the USICA and the COMPETES Act. We'll see how that goes. The technology areas that will see immense attention over the next 10 years and now, right now, are listed over here. I won't go into the details. Quantum computing, information systems, artificial intelligence, machine learning, robotics, genomics, synthetic biology, cybersecurity. Each of those areas requires investment in the state if we are to compete with the best out there. That number of R1 institutions is growing. The nation's goals are to address economic prosperity, domestic manufacturing, national security, shared prosperity, energy and environment, health, education and workforce development, and transportation. We want to be part of that solution. But participating in this nation's bipartisan goals to compete with international players, and the international competition is extremely stiff, as you know this right now. This is what all our universities do. We need your and the state support to attract the best talent that will enable Nevada to excel and change lives of our citizens. Our priorities are aligned with the goals of the federal agencies. And they're very simple. People, ideas, and tools. People and ideas is talent. Tools are broadly accessible, state-of-the-art shared facilities and educational tools.
So indeed, Nevada is in a position to engage and take advantage of the federal government's plans, as Myrtle has been talking about. But to be among leaders and to be truly competitive requires further investment. And also, the opportunities reside not just in the realm that is highlighted here on this slide. For example, the National Institutes for Health have significant increased investments in the medical realm. And I'll speak for Las Vegas and UNLV. We think there's fantastic untapped potential in the Las Vegas region, given the diversity of the population and its aging character, to serve as a research testbed that would be of great interest to pharmaceutical companies, for example, who are interested in just this population base for testing, for drug testing. And so we are working to stand up our own capacity in clinical trials. Next slide, where are we here? All right, so research and education exist in an ecosystem, one that drives institutional excellence, including economic growth, while strengthening something that we all care deeply about, which is the capacity of our graduates to adapt and thrive in an increasingly complex world. And so here I have a diagram that starts with four of the Carnegie metrics shown in the gray boxes. And this represents something of a pipeline as I've drawn it here. And you can think of it that way, but the relationships between these elements are actually more complex than a pipeline would suggest. And the elements, in fact, feed back on one another in complex ways. So moving from the left, a critically important driver that Carnegie uses to assess research intensity is the number of PhD students. And our R1 standing attracts some of the country's best and brightest, and the world's best and brightest students as graduate research students. And our state support is critical in attracting and fairly compensating these students. You heard about that from a joint presentation by both of our institutions last March. Those who prevail in their education go on to be granted research doctorates. Many of these people enter the workforce. Some of them stay on at this campus or move to other campuses and become postdocs. And they often continue in the university pipeline in this way. And our R1 status is part of the brand that attracts other outstanding postdocs who drive further our research intensity and impact. It's both a brand and it's also an indicator of the kind of research activity that we strive to have. And finally, these individuals are central to an enterprise that includes them, it includes faculty, it includes the support staff that keep the research administration enterprise going, it includes those who maintain the facilities. And a measure of their activity is research expenditures on the right-hand side. And so these expenditures support faculty effort, equipment, et cetera. And state support is absolutely critical. It does not survive and thrive by grant dollars alone. The state support is absolutely critical. So then let's move to the technicolor part of this slide, what it all yields. The research intensity creates undergraduate research platforms, and I think that's worthy of a talk in itself. Undergrad research experiences give students wonderful opportunities to understand research, not only the technical elements, but what it means to be part of a community in a problem-solving enterprise. R1 standing and high research intensity strengthens Nevada's brand and reputation, attracting the best faculty and students. Our research graduates have an impact on policy, on practices and regional leadership, as I'll say a little bit more about later in this talk, that really enable Las Vegas to be Las Vegas and Nevada to be Nevada with the lifestyles that we all value. Our research activity seeds new business formation and attracts diverse employers with a skilled workforce. And finally, a research-driven education graduates students who, through their hard problem-solving, individual grit, as well as learning how to work with others, come to understand that they can affect positive change in a complex, disruptive world and workplace. And frankly, I don't think we have any higher obligation than to graduate students that have that deepened sense of capacity. So taking one metric at a time, PhD student enrollment. It's about our doctoral students that serve as the entry point to this pipeline for research talent, and they become part of this economically diverse workforce. I indicated that the R1 serves as part of a UNLV and UNR brand that attracts the best students, who in turn are engines for the research and innovation. And we need to underscore again that the state support for graduate student research assistance is critically important. Again, you heard about this last March, but as a further reminder, I have in the inset in the upper right the cover slide for the presentation you heard from in March. And finally, just from the UNLV's perspective, our research breadth is a great strength. Now, we know that we have a lot of opportunity to capture when it comes to growing our research and strengthening it in the STEM fields, and we're committed to doing that. But in the humanities, the social sciences, the arts, and the professions, actually, we have quite a vigorous research enterprise. And we think that this positions UNLV to join UNR in taking on some of the great, complex, interdisciplinary challenges that we face in society today.
So you notice the data here, everything you see in black, the numbers in black is what we have, and the red is a projection. As we move forward from fall of 22 to fall of 25, the next Carnegie classification would be 24, and which year is picked for what metric all depends. So, you know, PhD enrollment is critical. This is where the investments from the state come in supporting more students and higher stipends. You don't buy the lottery ticket, you don't win the lottery. And you don't get enrollment, you don't get graduates. So once you do have the research doctorates, see, at the last Board of Regents meeting, and Ed alluded to that, Vice Provost Kate Corgan of UNLV and David Jay of the University of Nevada, Reno, made a very compelling presentation regarding the invaluable services that our graduate students provide our institutions and the state. Our grad students, our doctoral students, are critical to the core of an R1 institution. And the number of doctoral degrees conferred, as you've seen, is a major factor in the R1 classification calculation. Our doctoral students and graduate students in general, they teach undergraduate courses, laboratories, recital studio sections. They support faculty research, innovation, scholarship, and creative activities by performing research and preparing the grant proposals and training and mentoring undergraduates in hands-on experiential learning. They support student success and career readiness. They create and scale up startup companies that create high-paying jobs in the region. So the students graduating with doctoral degrees are part of the pipeline that comprises young faculty talent and serves as a source of expert talent in the local workforce. Their expertise in graduation attracts new businesses. They create new businesses of their own. And again, state support is essential for creating and sustaining this population of doctoral graduates.
So on to another of the Carnegie metrics, that is the postdocs and our other non-faculty researchers. And our universities have a strong role in nurturing our PhD graduates from our other institutions. And postdoc research appointments provide further training that yields independent, more mature researchers who are prepared to become industry, education, and policy leaders. So growth in this metric, and our goals here are ambitious, as you can see from looking from left to right, will further strengthen our standing, it will strengthen our brand, and most fundamentally, it will strengthen the quality of the research activity we have ongoing on our campuses. For UNLV, this needs to be enabled in part by an increase in our grant capture. And we're working hard to streamline our hiring processes into the postdoc realm to open up the pipeline between our own doctoral graduates and postdoctoral appointments. And just stepping back as one who's spent a little time on the floor in research, and I'm sure Myrtle will agree, There's nothing quite like the vibrancy and excitement and productivity of a research enterprise that has a dense population of postdocs, people who have the kind of energy that you need to drive things forward, and the class of ideas that challenge everyone, including the most senior researchers.
And, at some point you'll find out we are all making investments of our own in postdocs and research faculty, just so that they can advance the research enterprise. Moving on to research expenditures. Given the investments in cutting edge and youth-inspired research that other states are making in their institutions, it is a certainty that if all we do is maintain the status quo in research expenditures, we will slide backwards nationally in the national metrics. Grant and contract funded expenditures are going up, as you're seeing over here. And we are not doing too badly. We need to do more. But grant and contract funded expenditures pay for faculty effort on that particular project alone, for equipment bought for that project, and for the infrastructure for that particular project. So a combination of state and research expenditures from other agencies, what we call sponsored support, is extremely critical. Our goal is ambitious. Biomedical research is a leading opportunity for growth. As of the new NSF, is emphasis that we talked about earlier. We are growing our corporate partnerships. The entrepreneurial outlook on both campuses looks very good. But I'll reiterate that investments in talent and infrastructure is critically important if we are to meet our goals. So let's talk about this high-impact research that we are engaged in. You know, I talk to my colleagues, and we talk about what we do in the lab at 2 o'clock in the morning. Nobody cares about that. But what is the impact of that work at 2 in the morning on a benchtop on the lives of a citizen in the state? Our high-impact research, and let me highlight this. All three NC institutions agree that our high-impact research addresses the grand challenges of our time, grand challenges being water, security, food, disease, cybersecurity, and we can go on. Our high-impact research brings new funding to Nevada from outside. It anchors economic development in emerging fields. It supports legacy industries and business sectors of long-term importance to Nevada. And it is entwined in the education and the workforce development, hence contributing to the career success, career access, and career readiness of our graduates. The next series of slides, both the ones that I present and what Ed presents, will be on a research enterprise, research activities, and subsequent economic impact. We will keep this brief, because that in itself, this could take up a whole hour, and we'll save that for a later date. The research and innovation based economic development in this region is anchored by the University of Nevada, Reno's world-class faculty, students, and staff across colleges, schools of medicine, engineering, science, business, agriculture, cooperative extension. It's anchored also by the University of Nevada, Reno Innovation Center and the Nevada Center for Applied Research. In the past 8 years, our faculty, staff, and our partners and the companies that have come in have raised $136 million in venture capital, which has gone straight back into the economy. We are working with about 190, but more like 200 companies, agencies, organizations through memberships. We have created 538 jobs, more than 538 jobs, high-tech jobs in this area. And we know that one high-tech job creates 4.3 service sector jobs. So there's a huge impact of this kind of economic development activity. We have 38 companies with university-based operations, and they can access one of the best infrastructures anywhere in the region. They get access to equipment that they couldn't afford on their own because they're still young and starting out. And this is what our economic development activities are resulting in. Our high-impact Wolfpack research, and I'm not going to go into details, and these are just a small sample of what we do. We're protecting Lake Tahoe through science and art. And I say art because one of our award-winning faculty colleagues from the College of Liberal Arts, Peter Goyne, documented the history and the impact of climate change on Lake Tahoe and the surrounding regions. He did this through his remarkable photography, and he's published books on that. We are developing early warning systems for wildfires, improving earthquake resiliency in buildings and bridges. Our educators are shaping worldviews and fostering the talent pipeline. In the School of Medicine, our high-impact Wolfpack research is closing Nevada's healthcare professionals gap. The research grants and funding, by the way, the School of Medicine, it's a small school of medicine, but at the national level, on a per faculty basis in the top 35, I would like to say we're top 30, and they probably are, on the safe side, in the top 35, and that's a remarkable achievement. Their research grants and funding and the studies that they conduct help with treatments for muscular dystrophy, gastrointestinal disorders, fertility, cancer, HIV, infectious diseases, cardiovascular diseases, battlefield injuries, brain and neurological disorders. And they were on the front and center in the state COVID-19 testing research and leadership. Governor Sisolak tapped Dr. Mark Pandori as the state's expert to establish the COVID-19 testing system in Nevada.
Thank you. So nurturing and the creation of the talent that we've been talking about is a critically important element of innovation that is born on our campuses. And I just, in this cartoon form, show you something of the innovation ecosystem that some of our graduates are drawn to. They're drawn to the idea of becoming part of an innovation ecosystem that through our business incubator, the New Hughes Business Incubator opened last fall, and our Blackfire Accelerator create game-changing companies. So this ecosystem, as it's brought into maturation, is also attracting talent originating from outside of Nevada, as well as talent that might have left the state that has then come back. And a conspicuous example of this is the company that brought to you the President Whitfield Avatar, which I think you heard about and witnessed, and maybe you've played with it online, which is now serving students and has captured the attention of higher education nationally. So some figures of merit for our impact are shown on the left with respect to engagement with companies, corporate-sponsored research, engagement with companies through MOUs, et cetera, patents issued. I want to highlight a particular example here. One arena that is highly productive and is recognized nationally for its impact is materials science. Now, Professor Kim, shown here with his team, leads materials science development that has high economic impact. And in fact, the broad area of material science, many of us involved nationally in research, believe that there's a great story to be told, that material science is at the heart of a great many of economic transformations and advances in this country. And you can point to it in the biomedical realm, computer science realm with respect to computer chips, electric vehicles and batteries, all the way to nuclear power. And so material science is something that I think both institutions understand as having great potential as well as already great achievement. A focus of our research going forward is investing in areas where multiple disciplines have to join forces given the complex nature of the problems that are presented to us. And in the box on the right-hand side here, listed seven areas where we are making faculty hires to join an already existing body of faculty experts to invigorate areas in these so-called clusters. I'll highlight here for you brain health. It's an area of intense interest to UNLV. The Brain Health Enterprise recently captured a renewal from NIH of about $11.3 million grant from the state into the state of Nevada to study Alzheimer's disease and markers for it that may be found in the blood. And happily and with great gratitude, this program has attracted significant outside donor support as well. So it's not just the federal dollars, it's not just the state dollars, but external dollars are coming in from interested donors. We believe that this can form the basis of a nationally leading effort in clinical trials. I mentioned that researchers, education that is informed with research, touches many, many aspects of life in Nevada. And in no area can you really point to more impact than you can in water science. It is people who have been had a research-driven education that are populating our agencies in leadership roles, both in southern Nevada and throughout the state. So they're defining policy. We're entrusting them to define policy because of this research-driven education that they've had. In particular, in the city of Henderson, neighboring Las Vegas, it is water policies and practices that are informed by UNLV researchers that were brought in to help establish that policy through contract that enables Henderson to be Henderson, to enable Henderson to be the Henderson that it is today with the quality of life that it has. I think that tells a fantastic story of positive impact. Next, please. And the final point I'll make in terms of a particular topic is an enterprise called The Practice, which stands for Partnership for Research, Assessment, Counseling, Therapy, and Innovative Clinical Education. The Practice has practices, if you will, for engaging in the Las Vegas region that are strongly informed by research that is undergone in our Department of Psychology. The impacts here are enormous. They are keeping students on track to graduate from high school and enter higher education. They are helping keep families together that are under the strain of an extraordinary set of economic demands in the complex city of Las Vegas. And so here the impact includes the economic portion, but it includes something I think that is much harder to characterize, but is at least as important when it comes to quality of life.
So before we end, I'd like to talk about leveraging state investment in our research universities for impact. We said with state support, we will leverage that with external federal funding and industry funding. Our R1 standing attracts outstanding faculty and students despite intense competition. Our research generates business growth as well as great social good.
Speaking of social good, we all are experiencing living the complexity of a rapidly changing world. Our research enables our society and emboldens our students to be leaders in taking on great societal challenges and following new funding directions that call for a broadening and deepening of our research capacity. And our research enterprise is intimately intertwined with our educational enterprise. Research and education is not an either-or proposition. There is no more powerful educational experience than one informed by the problem solving and community building that research involves. And it graduates students who understand that they're capable of living and thriving in a complex world.
So finally, we are requesting that support for our doctoral students, faculty and staff be a top priority such that we can continue to remain R1 institutions and make lives of all Nevadans better tomorrow than they were yesterday. We assure you that we'll continue to leverage state resources with funding from federal and industry sectors. With that, we thank you, and research does work for Nevada.
Thank you both very much. Do I have any questions or comments from the board? Thank you guys very much.
Well done.
Appreciate all you do and keep us going to 2024.
Thank you.
We will now move to item number 10, new business. Is there any new business from the committee?
New business.
Regent Arascata.
Thank you. Two of the items I'd like to follow up on. One of them at our quarterly meeting in September, in particular to item number 6 from today. Review the student enrollment engaging in student government, specifically with the Nevada Student Alliance, to assure this policy that we just adjusted is not being taken advantage of by students. I feel that's imperative. If this is something that's happened in the past, we need to make sure this does not happen again.
Did you say you had two or just that one?
Hit my clicker. And just an update on the success of item number 8, in particular to the National Science Foundation and the INCHI track. I thought that that presentation from the in regards to the National Science Foundation was fantastic. I'd just like to get some additional follow-up, if I may, if we may, in September, December next year. Thank you.
Thank you. I also have one item. In reviewing the materials for agenda item 5, it became apparent to me that the cleanup is needed in the sections of the handbook establishing provisions for residency determination. Would staff please take a look at these sections in Title 4, Chapter 15, and revise as necessary for clarity and to ensure consistent implementation by all the campuses? All right, seeing no other new business, we will go to public comment for ARSA. Is there any public comment in ELCO? Is there any public comment in Las Vegas?
There is none. Excuse me, there is none.
Is there any public comment here in Reno? Seeing none, we stand adjourned.